Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Mr. Colbert, you could work on so many issues. Why are you interested in this issue?
I like talking about people who don't have any power. And this seems like one of the least powerful people in the United States are migrant workers who come and do our work, but don't have any rights as a result. And yet we still invite them to come here and at the same time ask them to leave. And that's an interesting contradiction to me. And, you know, whatsoever you do for the least of my brothers, and these seem like the least of our brothers right now. A lot of people are least brothers right now because the economy is so hard, and I don't want to take anyone's hardship away from them or diminish anything like that. But migrant workers suffer and have no rights.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by Ecolon, the ultimate low-maintenance, drought-tolerant lawn. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Why are we talking about solar stuff today? I don't know. Didn't Ron Cowgill do that yesterday morning?
I believe
on
he
Mighty
did.
House?
I believe he did.
Calling all media types, calling all PR types, this is a communication.
It's a bright, sunshiny day.
Yeah. No, that's what we are going to do that. But I wanted to get something out of the way first, because in the studio, we have Lisa Albrecht from the Illinois Solar Energy Tour and the Illinois Solar Energy Association. Ron talked about that yesterday. We're going to talk about it today. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to do it next week, too, because I saw the largest solar-powered installation, commercial installation in Illinois this past week. Got to climb up on the roof and watched Ron Cowgill inspect the
solar
array.
Solar panels?
Yeah, he's like...
That's really cool.
He's going, how are these things attached? How do they do that? You know, I mean, I'm standing there going, wow, I can see my house from here. And Ron's up there trying to figure out how they put it together. So that's the difference between
that
Ron Cowgill and me.
Yeah. You take in the view, and Ron wants to know why it was put there.
See, I'm the big picture guy, and Ron is he's the nuts and bolts guy. But I wanted to go back to the top of the show here when I played the cut from Stephen Colbert testifying before Congress.
That was fantastic, wasn't it?
It was very, very good. I want to give kudos to Mike Sanders. I hope some of you were listening to Our Town before the Mike Novak Show this morning. Of course, Our Town is on from 8 to 9 every Sunday here on Chicago's Progressive Talk. And Sanders made sure that cut that we just played got played because everybody's paying attention to the Colbert testimony that he did in character. And they're all saying, oh, my God, he did it in character. Oh, my God.
I'm not so sure how... I think that's kind of half how he is. I don't think it, you know, I know he was doing his truthiness and his, I mean, he's the satire of, him and Jim, John Stewart, rather, are the satires of our generation, the satirists.
Yeah, they are the satirists.
Amazing.
But the
Colbert
thing that really got to me was later that day, I happen to have MSNBC on, and Hardball comes on, and it wasn't Chris Matthews. Chris was out of town, whatever. Thank goodness, because I didn't want to see Tweety pontificate on this. But Chuck Todd, who is an NBC correspondent, White House guy, and probably the biggest Nimrod I've ever seen on television.
That's putting it so well.
He is so pompous and so arrogant. And then he comes on and he says, this is just too far. Now, I think that Congress has jumped the shark. He actually said those words.
Really?
Yeah. I'll tell you when Congress jumps the shark. When they favor big business over the middle class, when they fail to pass a real energy policy, when they stonewall every effort to move this country forward, and of course, I'm speaking mostly Republicans, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. Well, they have no ideas. There's nothing out there.
No.
And anything that is proposed is stonewalled. And then
they're going back to pseudo-McCarthyism just to try to, you know, get their votes back.
You know, that's the whole thing, is that just say anything you want.
They'll call you a communist.
Why don't we just, I don't know.
Or socialist.
I think we ought to start calling Democrats baby killers because we haven't gone far enough. All right? They're socialists. They're communists. They hate America. Let's just call them baby killers. What's the lowest of the low we could call them? Because if it gets out in the media, it will be repeated endlessly, not just by Republicans, but by the mainstream press. It's every talking point that comes out of the right-wing maw is repeated over and over again until it becomes fact. And I'm just sick of it. And I'm really sick of Congress not being able to accomplish anything.
And I've said
on the show before, I've requoted somebody, and I can't remember who said it, and I really do believe it right now, that somebody once talked to a congressman, somebody in the House of Representatives. It was a Democratic congressman. And they said, Republicans are kind of the enemy of your proposals. And he says, the enemy is not Republicans. The enemy is the Senate. And I really, truly believe that the
bureaucracy is everyone's enemy.
The Senate is the enemy of the American people. All those rich, fat cats who have nothing better to do than wag their tongues and produce zip, zero.
I did enjoy it when Colbert was like, I do know that after I've spoken, I'm not going to quote this exactly, but he's like, that you will work together as two opposite sides to, you know, do work better for the people like you always do. No one could hold in the laugh when he said that. Like, I watched the footage and there was this poor guy sitting behind him who was, I thought he was going to explode. He was trying so hard.
Yeah, the people who were on camera were trying to keep us straight.
Trying so hard not to laugh.
It's like, you didn't want to be sitting next to Colbert.
I was sitting at my front desk just cracking up and everybody at work was like, what's so funny?
So that's my rant. I just had to get it out because there's all this coverage about, did Colbert go over the top? What's he doing?
He was spot on. He was brilliant, in my opinion.
And
he was totally brilliant.
As Mike Sanders pointed out in Our Town today, the cut I played at the top of the show is the part you're not seeing.
Right.
You're hearing the quote Brazilian is what everybody's playing.
I did like that, you know, making the soil waste high and, you know, where is the funding? He was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so funny.
All right. I feel better.
Yeah. You're a little lighter there, my friend.
I feel better. Wait a second. Now, you missed us last week.
Yes, I did, sadly.
And
I was recovered
of all
by
the
then,
days to miss the show,
know.
It was Talk Like a Pirate Day.
I know.
And we all talked like a pirate. However, you'll be happy to know.
I might lay an egg over excitement.
No, it's Talk Like a Chicken Day.
Yay! Is that a chicken? Or is that kind of like a chicken with an ailment?
What you're finding out, it's easier to talk like a pirate than it is like a chicken.
I would assume so, yes.
Nobody here but us chickens.
I say, boy, look at me when I'm talking to you, boy.
There you go.
Just something kind of about a boy that don't know baseball.
That's a great quote.
I love that one.
That's probably...
That's my favorite Foghorn Leghorn ever.
Something kind of
about a boy that don't play baseball.
We're playing the chicken and talking like a chicken because in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about Hennapalooza coming to Chicago October 3rd, a week from today. Hennapalooza. We'll be talking to Michelle Toma about that. The great people at Angelic Organics Learning Center are behind it. Not surprising, because we've talked about chickens with them on the show before. Also in the second hour, and I love my headlines. Sometimes I write headlines on my website. I hope that folks who listen to the show and they miss part of the conversation go to the website. Because, by the way, MikeNowak.net, MikeNowak.net. And you can always find out information about this show, about past shows. The podcasts are there. The link to my blog, which I haven't posted yet, but when I get home.
Your newsletter, you can sign up for that too.
You can sign up for my newsletter.
Look at those baby chicks. They're so cute.
That's on the homepage, the Hennapalooza baby chicks. Those are adopted, those are rescued chicks.
Oh, well, the ones that are black and white are so cute.
I know.
I've never seen a black and white chicken. Yeah?
They are cute.
They're cute.
So if you go to MikeNowak.net this week, you will see all the information, links about what we're talking about. Second hour, I mentioned the headline I like that I wrote yesterday is Green Roofs, Compost Tea, Agent Orange, and Mars Rocks. That's all going to be in one conversation in the second hour.
Wow.
Yeah. How cool is that? That's Mike Repkin. He's a biologist. He's with Urban Habitat Chicago. He's bringing his friends Dave Hampton and Molly Meyer. They're going to talk about, I'm going to have to get the science clip because it's science. The rooftop gardening has gone from touchy-feely to science.
To earth-hugging, tree-hugging, to...
Right.
To Newton.
Yep. To things that you
don't
actually...
Don't just let the apple hit you in the head. Grow it on your roof.
Huh?
Newton.
Oh, wait. There it is. Oh, I missed it. Let's try that again. It would help if I...
Your technique isn't a science now, is it?
No. Wait, let's try the science again.
Science!
Ah!
Okay, there we go. So science in the second hour. And in the first hour, we have science. And as a matter of fact, I have music for everything today, including this. And it's about power. This Carl Stalling music from Looney Tunes is called Powerhouse. And that's what we're talking about in the first hour. Our power and how we change the power in America. In the studio, as I mentioned before, Lisa Albrecht, who's a renewable energy specialist from Solar Service. Lisa, how was your experience on the Mighty House show yesterday?
You've met Ron and Bob, right?
Joe Builder.
I wanted to call him Bob Builder.
Whatever. But, he doesn't care. Yes, he does.
It was great fun.
This is even more fun.
Maybe we'll talk more about the science.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll talk more about
science.
It actually is pretty cool. You're doing, what is this, the fourth annual tour, which is next Saturday?
It is. This is the fourth annual. However, nationwide, it's the 15th annual. It's the largest grassroots solar event in the world.
I like that. And we've been running those, if you've been listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk, you've heard the ads for that promoting the event. 190
locations across the state in Illinois, and mm-hmm. we're part of 5,000 across the country.
Wow. All right. So what? That's my question.
Well, the event's a self-guided tour, so it works out great for families who might have soccer games and are busy. It's going to be from 10 until 3 next Saturday. And what you can do is go to our website, which is illinoisolar.org, and mm-hmm. Check out the solar tour. And basically, you look at your geographic area, find the sites that are of most interest to you, and pick your own schedule and show up anytime from 10 until 3.
So what kinds of things are you going to see? Is any of it practical? Like I said, I went out last week to United Display Craft in Des Plaines and saw their solar array that they put on the roof. We got to climb up to the roof. It's right next to O'Hare. So the interesting thing, and we'll talk about this next week, because Brandon Levitt, who you work with at Solar Service Inc., is going to be there. And you can stand on the roof and see O'Hare, and that actually created some problems in putting the installation up, because you got to keep in mind...
We needed FAA approval.
I know, yeah. And I love the idea that you'd put solar things up and a pilot would be coming in and go, I'm blinded, I can't see. You got to be careful about things like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. We have to think about everything. The amount of pressure that we're going to put on the rooftop, glare to the neighbors and things like that. So it's, a good installer is going to look at all of those things to make sure that your solar installation does make sense. And it certainly does here in Illinois. People don't realize just what a great opportunity we have to displace a lot of our energy.
But I'm sure people think that Illinois is not sunny enough to handle this, that you're not going to get enough bang for your buck. How do you respond to that?
Absolutely. Well, there's two types of technologies. There's solar thermal and solar electric. And a solar thermal system is actually going to respond really well. When you're working with heat, anytime you're going from cold to hot, you're much more efficient. So those systems work fantastic in the wintertime. Most of them also shed snow in the winter, so we don't really have to worry about that. They're going to, because the heat that collects on the solar panel itself is going to melt that snow. So Mother Nature is going to take care of it to make sure that you're getting heat when you need it in the wintertime. And then the solar electric panels, you can get up to about an inch of snow on a solar electric panel and still have it work. But we're looking, you can't look at the micro minute of solar. You need to really look at the full year of generation. And certainly in the summertime when we're using our air conditioning and our electric load is at its highest, that's when the sun is out and available the most. So we have great opportunities here.
That's Lisa Albrecht. She is with the Illinois Solar Energy Association. She's double dipping this weekend on Chicago's Progressive Talk. I'm going to have a little chat with Leslie McCain, her buddy who arranged this. Leslie's just totally sucker punched me about, but that's okay.
He's such the victim, aren't you, Mike?
Yes, I am.
I was filling in for Mark Berger yesterday, too.
What's that?
I was filling in for Mark Berger yesterday.
So Mark Berger,
I have a wood cross you have to carry around the block when we leave, okay?
I walk down the block and flagellate myself a little bit, too. But it produces energy.
I replanted the tree I made the cross out of, though, so you can take rest assured.
You know,
you guys have it all.
This is Heather. It's Sunday. Okay, cool it.
I know. I wasn't here last week. I'm overdue.
All right, talk like a pirate. Just once.
Arg.
Okay, there you go. Talk like a chicken.
Monk. Was that a chicken? It was like a sick chicken. The sound a chicken makes before it dies.
All right. It's the Mike Novak Show. We're slap happy this morning.
It's a donut they brought.
And we'll be back with Lisa Albrecht in just a second. Now, what are you doing Friday night? This coming Friday, October 1st. It happens to be my sister's birthday, as a matter of fact. Well, if you want to be a booster for breast cancer research and you like plants and flowers, maybe you'll make your way to Lurvy Landscape and Garden Center in Des Plaines. This upcoming Friday is Pink Night, from 5 to 7 p.m., when experts will answer questions about the Invincibel Spirit Hydrangea, a durable hot pink variety of hydrangea. And if you buy one, Lurvy's will donate $3 to the Breast Cancer Foundation. Oh, and there will be refreshments and giveaways and balloons. I assume some of them will be pink. And we heard something about pink hoses, too. Not stockings, real pink garden hoses.
Awesome.
You would get one, wouldn't you?
Pink and I don't really go well together, but for that kind of cause.
That's true.
Lost my grandmother to breast cancer, so I would have a pink hose.
Well,
for sure.
That's
cool.
But
yeah, as a redhead, it's
not your color.
It looks like me and Adam Acid had an argument, Me and Pepto went.
But here's the deal. You might have to forego that mentality, because if you wear pink, you get 10% off any purchase.
So you mean like my fall hardy mums, I could go and wear a pink t-shirt and raise money for a good cause and then get a discount on mums?
Yep.
I have pink.
I'm sure you do. Every woman has pink somewhere, except for the really, really tasteful ones who only wear black. This is the kickoff party for Pink Week at Lurvy's, 2550 East Dempster Street in Des Plaines, so you can stop in any time from October 1st to October 10th and pick up an Invincibel Spirit. And as I said, if you wear pink, get 10% off any purchase. For more information, visit lurvies.com. LURVEYS.com. Be a gardener for life by shopping at Lurvie Landscape Supply and Garden Center from October 1st to 10th. And consider stopping in this Friday for Pink Night, 5 to 7 p.m., 2550 East Dempster Street in Des Plaines. Lurvie's is a proud sponsor of the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
We're getting to the end of the gardening season, and a lot of your plants probably look like they're about ready to bite the dust. So shouldn't you just let your deer and rabbit neighbors chow down on a free meal? Au contraire, mes amis. There's a reason why Mr. Ranger, sir, tells visitors not to feed Yogi and Boo Boo, and that's because they don't want bears associating people with dinner. Same with deer. If they lunch in your yard now, they'll be back in the spring. So it's a good idea to keep using Bobex R animal repellent until that foliage has turned to mush. Bobex will not only keep grazers at bay, but it helps plants retain moisture during an early fall frost and throughout the frigid winter weather. Bobex R animal repellent is harmless to humans, pets, birds, and aquatic life. It contains no petrochemicals and is made from natural and recycled ingredients. Of course, always read and follow label directions. Bobex is available only at your local independent garden center. For example, Platte Hill Nursery in Carpentersville, Illinois, Gomez Greens in Chicago, Illinois, and Alternative Garden Supply in Cary, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bobex.
Why do I have a sudden urge to hit you on the head with an anvil?
Boink. Whoop. Wait, there's some, here's sound effects. Like that?
Yeah.
We are back. See, I'm thinking solar power every time I hear this music.
I will now.
I know. Lisa Albrecht will be forced to.
We've needed a theme song. No, we haven't.
And that's going to be running through your head the rest of the day, too. Everybody's listening to the show is going to be driving along and bum, 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 bum.
Curse you, Michael Novak! Curse you!
Well, better that than...
There could be worse songs.
Yeah.
Than something from ABBA or, you know.
You could play She Blinded Me with Science and really make people mad.
I could play that whole... Yeah. You know, that's true. All right. I asked earlier Lisa Albrecht from the Illinois Solar Energy Association and next week's Illinois Solar Energy Tour, which is part of the national tour hosted by the American Solar Energy Association.
Got an awful lot in there.
I asked you, so what? As I said, we went up on the roof of this big factory in Des Plaines, but the average person wants to know, you know, when can I get started? Can I do this next week? Is it going to do any good?
Oh, absolutely. Some of the first solar installations in the state of Illinois were installed during the Carter administration in 1977.
We all know that story. We know that Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the roof of the White House and Ronald Reagan took them down. Thank you very much, Mr. Reagan. He was setting the tone there. And then we went back. You know, we regressed for 30 years.
Yep.
30 years now. But you say you were starting in the late 70s. We could be so far, much farther ahead if there had been more, our enemy, Congress, if they had actually done something.
I don't even want to get on my Reagan soapbox. We don't have enough time.
But you say it's been since the 70s. What can you do for the average home?
Well, the first thing that you can start with is certainly solar hot water. Solar hot water can do about 70% of your domestic load. And that's energy you're not having to burn every single day. So the sun comes to us naturally in the form of heat. So collecting that heat off your roof and feeding it into your hot water heater just makes good sense. The other thing is, you know, solar electricity. With solar thermal, you can also do space heat assist as well and help your furnace out. So you're, again, burning less energy.
Okay, but how much, how practical does it get? I know people say, oh, I want to be off the grid, or getting credits into the grid.
Right. So when people are talking about going off grid, they're typically talking about solar electricity. And those systems are incredibly effective. You know, one of the upsides of having a bad economy is that worldwide prices of photovoltaic panels have dropped tremendously. The panels are, you know, that are in the market right now are about 15% efficient, which is fantastic. And there's two sides to the equation when you're looking at installing a system. One is how much energy am I generating? But two, what's the value of that energy? So as the prices of solar panels have gone down, the systems make a lot more sense. And so you're looking at somewhere between a 10 to 15 year payback period in Illinois. Now, on both coasts where electricity is more expensive, they're looking at about a 5 to 7 year payback. So you're seeing a lot more installations.
So we're cursed by cheap energy here in the Midwest.
Cheap energy is part of the equation. Absolutely.
I got to tell you, it's not so cheap, though, depending on what happens. And I've told this story on the show before, and I'm still honked off about it. Because for my natural gas, I signed on with one of those lock-in-your-prices things and figured, oh, the price of natural gas is going to go up. All it's done is gone down.
Right. And that's an anomaly. We're going to definitely see that reverse.
After my contract runs out, I'm sure. Because I'm not going to sign up again. I'm so unhappy. I was paying at one point $1.19 a therm.
Right.
And right now it's like
59
is what I heard. It's really ridiculously cheap at the moment. That might not be accurate. I haven't called in a while. I do that every once in a while. I call the gas company. I say, what's the price of a therm right now? And they'll tell me. I'll just go, But... Oh, well.
No, absolutely. Well, right now there's tremendous incentives on both the federal government and state government level, and so there's never been a better time. Prices are low for solar right now, and then we've got two great programs that could help offset as much as 60% of the cost of installation. So you're looking at 30% federal tax credit uncapped, all as part of the stimulus program.
So meaning that no matter how much you spend, you're going to get 30% off.
Absolutely.
And how do you qualify for that?
You know, it's just part of your when you file your taxes, you get an automatic tax credit if you installed solar within that year. It's so simple, you can do it on TurboTax.
Wow.
So it's pretty phenomenal. And then the state of Illinois also has a 30% rebate program, like many programs in the state.
That's been going on since 1999. Is that the one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was amazed.
Oh, I'm not sure if it's that long.
Is that a different one?
No, actually, I think it is that long. Sorry.
I think because that's what they were talking about at the ceremony on Tuesday.
Yes.
In Des Plaines. One of the things I saw recently, and it was at the Smart Home down at the Museum of Science and
Great
Industry,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool. If you haven't been there, it's still up, I believe.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they were going to take that down, and then they realized, no, this is too good. We got to leave this baby up. Rollout solar panels. They're flexible, and it's, you know, you think of a solar panel, you're thinking of the space shuttle and the space station and, you know, wings that are 1,200 feet long, and they had these rollout panels. Is that practical? What's the story
that? It's called thin film. Thin film is an evolving technology. Google covered their roof with thin film, and you can go to the Google website to actually track and watch these systems perform, and you can see how much electricity they're doing. It's not as efficient, and it's probably a better application for commercial, not as much residential, because when you're looking at a residential system, you know, you're looking at every dollar that you're spending, and you're going to get more of an output at today's technology with a crystalline panel.
All right, but you say for the average homeowner, you can get up to 60% off, which is just ridiculous. So, you know, say 2,000 square foot home wants to do panels. Obviously, it depends on what the orientation of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other factors you take into consideration?
The first place to start is how much energy are you using? So every family, it's tremendous variance that I see when people call in. I personally use about 150 to 200 kilowatts a month. My sister, who has a couple of boys and video games galore, she's using about 2,000 kilowatt hours a month. So it really depends on what your footprint, how much are you consuming?
I got to go look at mine. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
I don't even want to know. I'm kind of afraid. I have a little guy at home, and the movies and the games and the toys.
But all right, I'll bring up one more thing, because we're going to have to get to Rick DeMaio weather. I've talked to Ron Cowgill about this, about my own home. I've got a very old home. It's got a balloon frame. It's not insulated as well as it should be. I'm working towards that. His advice is, forget the electric for now because you got more serious issues. Would you agree?
We definitely suggest conservation before generation. Mm-hmm. But both are important part of the equations. It's kind of two-sided coin. So, you know, it's really looking at your home. What are the opportunities? I live in a building. It's going to be really hard to get insulation into my old brick condo. So for me, maybe generation might make the most sense. So I don't know that there's always one answer, mm-hmm. but really looking at your needs, your house, and what's going to be the best solution for the planet and for your family.
Well, next Saturday, October 2nd, 10 to 4, did you say?
10 to 3.
10
and
to
then
3.
We also have an after party at Uncommon Ground, who's sponsoring just kind of a celebration from 4 until 6 on Devon.
And you can go to my website, and I've got all the links. I've got a link to the tour, but if you want to go there directly, it's tour.illinoisolar.org. There are maps. Are the examples of the kinds of buildings you see?
Absolutely. It's completely interactive, and under the Director of Buildings, you'll be able to say, suggest, for example, Chicago, and then it has everybody listed alphabetically, and you can see whether it's passive solar, solar electric. We also have wind and geothermal, so we got a little bit of everything that homeowners are really proud of and looking to show off how the technology works, and they're the people on the street, the testimonial that these things work, not just a solar installer telling you
that.
And
it's getting bigger and better. As you said, in 2007, you had 70 of these homes and businesses, and now you have over 190 and just
correct.
In Illinois. And
just
how many
in Illinois?
Nationwide?
Over 5,000.
That's great. Good stuff. All right. And I won't even talk about Congress passing an energy bill because, you know, we'll just do it on our own. Let's just, you know, if people start doing this, it becomes...
If Congress won't lead us, we'll have to lead Congress.
Exactly. That's Lisa Albrecht from the Illinois Solar Energy Association. Part two is next week when we have your boss on, Brandon Levitt.
Great.
We'll talk a little bit more about that. We'll just keep hammering this until people get the idea. Thank you so much for coming down. I really appreciate
it. Thank you,
Mike. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. The rains were pretty consistent earlier in the year, but have been much spottier lately. As we move into autumn, keep an eye on rain totals in your area, especially if you planted trees this year, or if they're 1 or 2 years old. Some trees have already experienced unusual leaf drop, and it's important that all of your young trees have enough water to get through the winter. Don't get fooled by cool. That's what I say. Don't get fooled by cool. And what do I mean by that? If the weather's dry and it's cool, it's still dry. You need to get the drip hose out. Lay it at the base of your trees and let it trickle for as long as a couple of hours. Evergreens in particular need to be hydrated, as they can continue to lose moisture through their needles throughout the winter. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4444. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. We'll get to Rick DeMille weather in just a few seconds, but can you hear it ticking, Heather? Tick, 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 tick.
Is clock. That what that is?
It's my brain, I think. It's if you hear gears grinding, that's me.
Oh, okay.
Actually, the clock is ticking. We're almost at the end of fall lawn care time. This time, get out there right now and plant a lawn that will become lush and green, doesn't need to be fertilized, and once established will rarely need water. It's EcoLawn. It's a blend of 7 fine fescues. It's envirological. EcoLawn grows slowly, so you don't have to mow often or ever if you choose. Its roots go much deeper than conventional lawns, and it can withstand drought. And it crowds out weeds, so you don't need pesticides. EcoLawn is available at Lake Street Landscape Supply, 1810 West Lake Street in Chicago, or you can go online, of course, eco-lawn.com, EcoLawn. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. It's that time of the day where we go to, which line are we going to, Heather? Uno. And bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing well. You guys got a lot of caffeine in your system this morning.
Yeah, we do, don't we? I don't know what it is. We're just bouncing off the walls here.
Oh, that's fine. So I have to ask, why did the rooster cross the road?
I don't know. Is there an answer?
Yeah, to give the chicken a day off.
Where's my bell? I don't have a rim shot. Say that again. Why did the rooster cross the road?
Well, first off, you have to, you have to bring in the listeners that have been holding for the last half hour, waiting for this amazing segment at 9:30. So those who are not privy to what's been going on for the last half hour, Mike is basically talking all about how to talk like a chicken, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so last week we talked, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we had chicken jokes, so today is why did the rooster cross the road to give the chicken the day off?
But you remember one of the chicken jokes was, oh, by the way, thank you. One of the chicken jokes was when we had the folks on from Roosevelt University, and they were talking about Bubbly Creek and how at the 100 years ago there was so much pollution on it that there were photographs of chickens walking across the river. And then so we said, why did the chicken cross Bubbly Creek? Because it could!
and they wanted to get out from wherever they were, right?
Trying to get out of Chicago.
Yeah, that's something like that.
Yeah, well, the stockyards were still here, but they weren't. I don't think they dealt in chickens.
No, I don't think so either. But not a bad day to get out of Chicago when it's this cool out, right?
Well, I like jacket weather. The one thing I will say... What was really odd this week, very overcast a lot of the week, very windy, it didn't seem to matter whether the weather was cold or warm, it was windy.
Right. Well, you get into the month of September, particularly the second half, and to me the second half of September acts a lot like the first half of March, and it kind of makes sense because the sun is basically at its equinox, it's pointing directly over the equator. And we get about the same amount of incoming solar radiation right around the 20th to about the 25th in September that you do in March. And one thing I like to tell my students is that if you look at the average temperature for Chicago on September 21st and the average temperature for March 21st, you would think they would be the same because one is the first day of a season, spring and autumn, where you have equal amounts of sunshine. However, it's 72 degrees in September and it's only 51 in March. Obviously, we're coming out of the winter season in March, and we're coming out of the summer season in September. But it's that exchange of air masses from cold to warm that really gives us these strong mid-latitude cyclones and i.e. the wind. So it's been a very windy week, as you pointed out. But also, it's amazing. Yesterday's temperatures made us completely forget about the fact that 3 a.m. Friday morning, we were actually at 80 degrees Fahrenheit at 3 in the morning on a Friday. That blew my mind.
Yeah, that's pretty late. I was sitting on the porch during the warm part of the week and thinking, it's the end of September. This is pretty warm.
Yeah, and it was amazing because early in the week, Denver, Colorado had 94 degrees on Monday, 96 on Tuesday, 93 on Wednesday. The 96 that Denver had on Wednesday, or at least on Tuesday, was the hottest ever this late in the year. When we hit 91 degrees at the lakefront on Thursday, no, that was on Tuesday, Champaign, Illinois hit 96. That was the latest ever for them. And then the warmth obviously blew east. And on Friday, which I thought was, I've never seen a temperature this warm before this late in the year. On Friday in Washington, D.C., at National Airport, it hit 99 degrees.
Oh, my goodness.
99. And I'm thinking, well, the record's got to be in the low 90s. And sure enough, it was at 94. So when you break a record by 5 degrees any time of the year, that's pretty historic stuff.
Yeah.
And I did a little bit of digging, and that 99 at Dulles, or at least at National, was the hottest temperature ever this late in the year in Washington, D.C. And then the next, that day also, Philadelphia had a high of 92 degrees. That was the 55th day they were above 90. Compare that to the 23 we had in Chicago. That was a record for them. So far, the summer of 2010 is going down as the fourth warmest summer on record for Illinois out of 117 years is how far back we can go.
That's quite remarkable, actually.
Yeah, the fourth warmest, and most of it occurred basically south of Interstate 80. I mean, we talked about this earlier in the summer, how Chicago was always on the northern edge of that warm weather, but places south of us really, really warmed up during the month of August. So Illinois statewide had a ranking of 101 out of 116. If you look at some of the numbers in the deep south, Louisiana out of 116 was 115. Alabama was 114. Georgia was 114. Tennessee was 115. Florida was 115. And North Carolina was 114, while Virginia was 113. Again, this is all out of a ranking on a scale of 1 to 116. And when I heard Lisa talk about solar power, this would have been a fantastic year to grab onto a lot of solar radiation, because we had, not only was it a tremendously hot summer across much of the South, Mike, but residential, what they call REDT, the Residential Energy Demand Temperature Index, was the highest ever for the South, the Mid-Atlantic, and the Southeast, mainly because, you know, people need to cool off their homes. And even though we weren't extremely hot here in Illinois, or at least in Chicago, from a standpoint of 90-degree days, we had 85 days where the temperature exceeded 80, and that was a record. And on top of that, we had extremely high humidity. And we all know it's difficult to sleep at night when you don't have air conditioning. That energy demand for air conditioning was one of the reasons why that REDTI, that Residential Energy Demand Temperature Index, was so high. So, again, you know, we don't like to be alarmist about global warming, but we do like to be alarmist that when you have more and more people using electricity to cool themselves off during summers that are particularly hot, you need to start thinking more and more about alternative energy. And that's why I think it was such a great idea to have Lisa on.
Well, actually, she's still in the studio, Rick. And Lisa, is this something that you take into consideration when you're dealing with solar power?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, when we look at energy use across the country, it's important if each of us could be generating our own energy, that's, you know, a help to ComEd and to the utilities, because that's extra energy that they're not producing at night when they're normally in their off-peak hours. So you could be, you know, generating electricity all day long, feeding it into the grid, and then, you know, pulling that back into your home later in the evening. So generation is key. We've got, you know, on those hot days, the sun is as bright and as blue a sky as you can possibly imagine. So you're producing energy all day.
Lisa, are there any people who are actually off the grid?
You know, off-grid is pretty tricky because of the amount of energy that we use. A lot of our homes aren't smart yet. But, you know, if you're a smart homeowner and you are managing your electricity well, it certainly is a possibility. We've used a lot of energy. You're going to need to, you know, it's an investment. But certainly we're seeing more and more homes that go that direction, more and more smart homes being built, and certainly more LEED Gold and Platinum homes going up as well, where people are intelligently thinking about, you know, what is my energy use going to be and how I'm going to offset that? How am I going to generate my own electricity? My own heat, so that I can be independent and not have to pollute.
And, you know, I know several of colleagues of mine who live out in the Boulder, Colorado area who are also meteorologists and tend to be a little bit smarter about when to get their energy from the sun. They are basically off the grid for about 9 or 10 months out of the year because of the fact that they've been able to harness a lot of solar energy. Obviously, they have a lot more out there than we do here. But when I look back, Mike, at these numbers of how warm it's been and how hot it's been, and now we're up to, what is it now? We had Tropical Storm Matthew, the 13th hurricane of the season.
Yeah, when you get to the M's, you know, you're getting a lot of storms.
Yeah, because we typically get about 10 named storms per year. But, again, what I try to teach my students is that, okay, we haven't had any real tropical storm activity that has gotten close to the United States, but we've had 4 Category 4 hurricanes this year. That's a lot of energy that has been sucked up out of the oceans and put into the atmosphere. In addition to that, we had 2 Category 4s that existed at one time for a period of 24 hours. That was, I believe it was Julia and also Igor. And
my favorite, that's one of my all-time favorite.
Yeah, Igor has got to be Category 5. Yeah. To me, if a hurricane is named after Faye, it can only become a tropical storm, and that's it. that's a tremendous amount of energy. And when Igor and Julia were coexistent, that was the first time we've had 2 Category 4s since 1926 at the same time.
Really?
So, Yeah.
You said something interesting just now that that I wasn't aware of, and you said it's taking the energy out of the ocean,
right,
putting it into the atmosphere.
Right.
How does that change things?
What I think the better way to really classify tropical storms is what's called power dissipation. So Igor was a tremendously large hurricane, very, very large. Thankfully, it didn't get anything close to even Bermuda. It reported that Hamilton and St. Thomas had, or St. George's had, winds to 90 miles per hour, even though the eye of the storm was like 150 miles away. So what meteorologists tend to look at is how much available potential energy is there due to the fact that the oceans are not only warm, but warm to a very large depth. And what that usually translates into large hurricanes that can develop beyond a Category 3 into a 4 and a 5, not whether or not you had two or three hurricanes strike the U.S. mainland. Once those hurricanes become large and they vent that energy through the hydrologic cycle back into the upper levels of the atmosphere, what it generally tends to do is it takes the temperature pattern between, say, 40 degrees and 50 degrees latitude, and it basically pushes it back northward. So a couple of things can happen. Even though you may not have any hurricanes reach the coast, this venting process, and we've all seen it on TV, you know, satellite imagery, actually warms the atmosphere all the way up beyond the stratosphere, beyond the troposphere into the stratosphere. It's generally about 15 to 20 miles up, and it basically keeps all the cold air blocked up into northern sections of Canada. And you can go back 100 years and see not the number of storms, but the number of large, high-end storms and how that's had an effect on the September and the first half of October, at least temperature-wise, east of the Rocky Mountains. It generally tends to transfer heat from the tropics into the mid-latitudes, and usually that means a warmer-than-normal September and a warmer-than-normal October.
Hmm.
Now, we've had some cool weather come into the upper Midwest, but by and large, much of the south, the southern section of the United States. The other day, I was looking at temperatures in Tennessee, and they were still in the mid-to-upper 90s, and a widespread area, and that's usually a result of a very active tropical storm season, which is exactly what we have this year.
Okay, that's Rick DeMaio. We're going to get a forecast. Hang on, and we'll be back with him in just a second. The September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on the stands, and you need to get a copy. If you have a Zone 5 garden, which is what we have in Chicago for now, I'll let you know when global warming allows us to grow coconuts. Have you harvested your spuds this year? What? Never grown potatoes? Well, next year is the year, and there's a story on how to do it right. How about you do-it-yourselfers? You can learn how to build your own garden bench without power tools, though they might help. And did you know that your lawn weeds are speaking to you, probably in your sleep, but they're telling you things about growing conditions in your yard? Of course, there's my column on the inside back page. You probably won't learn anything by reading it, but I'm pretty needy, so do it anyway. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area, but why don't you have a subscription? Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Do you want to become part of the solar revolution? Are you looking for ways to take advantage of this unlimited source of energy for your home or office? You need to be part of the 2010 Illinois Solar Tour on Saturday, October 2nd. This is a statewide version of the National Solar Tour presented by the American Solar Energy Association. It's the largest grassroots solar energy event in the world. It's self-guided and it's free. In Illinois alone, you can visit more than 185 homes and businesses with renewable energy installations. Owners and energy experts will be on hand hand to answer questions and offer advice. Learn how ordinary people are using solar energy, wind energy, energy efficiency, and other sustainable technologies to reduce their monthly utility bills. View a solar car wash, a solar heated high school swimming pool, as well as many homes powered by clean, renewable energy. Take the tour and become part of the solution. For more information about the 2010 Illinois Solar Tour on October 2nd, go to www.illinoisolar.org or check out Planet WCPT at chicagosprogressivetalk.com.
It's fall planting time. It's Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center, and now through October 2nd, that's next Saturday, you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. Right now, you'll save 30% off their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor. Fall favorites like winter pansies and garden mums in all sizes and colors are here, and you'll save up to 50% off all remaining nursery stock. If that's not enough, now hear this. Sid's entire stock of perennials is buy one, get one free. Fall is the season for seeding and fertilizing your lawn, and it's also the time to plant spring blooming fall bulbs. And by the way, if you're fertilizing not high nitrogen, you don't want more on the potassium side. You don't want that high nitrogen number for fall fertilizing. Where were we? Yeah, SIDS has the largest selection of tulips, daffodils, iris, and other popular favorites in the area. Visit SIDSonline.com for more information on planting fall bulbs and to download the coupon for $10 off your purchase. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Remember, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs back to SIDS for recycling. Rick DeMaio is on the line, and I'm just going to tell you real quick, we got a call while we were away here, and it's...
Bus driver Santo wanted to know about solar water and how you can use that for radiant heat, and if you can use solar power, if it's more efficient, you know, if you can't generally generate electricity, is it more efficient to try to just heat your home and use the solar technology that way? And if you have a green roof, can you use the tubing and the water and the radiant heat from the solar to heat the roof?
And Lisa Albrecht is here from the Illinois Solar Energy Association. What's your response to that?
Well, I would say solar hot water systems are 70% efficient, so they're a tremendous source of energy. Usually if we've got some snow on the roof, your house is probably calling for heat, and so we can certainly interface with radiant floors. Radiators and baseboard heating, that's a high temperature source. You're looking at 212 degrees, so that's a little bit trickier, but certainly radiant floor, and you can also force your furnace into a hybrid furnace. As far as going towards your, heating off your green roof, I'd say that's probably not necessarily a great use of the energy, just because your house is looking for heat, and so you're going to be burning natural gas to do that. I would let Mother Nature typically take care of the snow melt off the roof. And we get that question a lot about driveways. But typically, if it's snowing, there's a cloudy sky out there, and we're not necessarily generating enough energy, so you're not going to keep up with your snow load. In order to get there. So it's all a matter of timing. So really putting the energy to use when it's needed, which is in your home. And domestic hot water, as well as space aid.
I know you're taking notes, Rick.
You know what? I remember my Uncle Donald used to run a black garden hose up and down his rooftop. He obviously used the solar panel and the heat radiating back off the rooftop to warm up the water that was going back into his pool. So that was his pool heater.
My favorite is I saw a gentleman in China. His mother had absolutely no source for heating water, and so he strung a bunch of 7-Up bottles together on the roof and used surgical piping to connect them all, and then ran water through that and then just collected it in 7-Up bottles so she got to have a hot shower.
Yeah, we did similar things like that in the Boy Scouts. And, you know, I always say...
There's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, I always say, Mike and Lisa, that if you ever want to figure out what you need to do to get through the day or get through the week with the least amount of resources, just go camping for a week, and you figure it out very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, what's the forecast, Rick?
All right, so obviously we had quite a bit of cool air worked its way south. We had a little bit of lake effect rain showers last night. Those have all dissipated, but temperatures today primarily in the upper 50s near the lake, low 60s inland. A lot of lake effect clouds both today, tonight, and tomorrow. So mainly cloudy skies. Further north and west you go, save for about Rockford, down to Marengo and Woodstock, where they'll be later on this afternoon. Apple picking, by the way, Mike. Weather looks pretty nice. I mean, sunshine, but cool for this time of year. So it's going to feel a little bit below average today, tomorrow. High temperatures again, upper 50s, low 60s. Ditto for Tuesday. Then I think we finally begin to warm up. probably mid to upper 60s on Wednesday, maybe mid 70s Thursday. We cool back down Friday and Saturday, Mike. But one thing we will not see in Illinois, in Chicago for the next 7 days, is an umbrella. Absolutely no rain in the forecast for the next 7 days. It looks very, very dry.
Well, see, and that's why earlier from the Care of Trees, we reminded people that even if it's cool, it's still dry. You know, folks get fooled by cool weather, and they think, well, it's cool, so the trees don't need moisture, but they still do, because dry is dry.
Right. We've had some fairly dry weather lately, so a little bit of watering is going to go a long way in helping them get through the winter, Mike.
Okay. Rick DeMaio Weather, you can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and link to DeMaioWeather.com. Any CBS2 appearances coming up?
Nope, not for a while, but I will be in CVS Pharmacy later on this afternoon. Does that count?
Absolutely. All right, look for Rick at your nearby CVS pharmacy. You are a character. All right. Well,
yeah, or at least one in the making.
He's pushing umbrellas and suntan lotion. Like, which will it be?
Neither this week, Heather.
All right, talk to you next week.
Okay, have a great week.
Bye-bye. Elise Albrecht, thank you for sticking around. We got a little bonus time about solar. And more next week.
Thanks so much. Had a great time. See you October 2nd.
That's right. I'm going to have to figure out where in my neighborhood. There's plenty in Chicago, right?
Tons. We have at least 50.
In the city itself?
Correct.
Wow. That's great. All right. Solar tour next Saturday, 10 to 3. Go to my website. Look at this week's show, and all the links and the maps are there. In the second hour today, we have got the folks from Urban Habitat Chicago, Mike Repkin, like I said, talk about a lot of different things and the new technology in green roofs. And then, later on, Hennapalooza. And we will all talk like a chicken. And I hope you... What are you showing me? The beat? Okay. We'll get to that later. Heather's always finding something online that I should pay attention to. The news is next. Stick around.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by Ecolon, the ultimate low-maintenance, drought-tolerant lawn. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
The second big hour of the Mike Novak Show on, it's a lovely September day. I like it cool. We didn't get the forecast, specific forecast for the Bears-Packers game.
For tomorrow.
But it sounds like, coolish.
As long as we come up with a healthy, dose of victory, I'll be all right. Doesn't care if it's sunny or raining or whatever. I just want to win.
Wow. Okay. Whatever you say, Heather.
Yeah, they should listen to me. They should. All the time. Win all the time. Every game.
Hey, let me... getting back to the show... I'm sorry, I actually brought up football.
I know, I'm sorry. By the way, I'm a little manic.
Do I get to play the Michigan fight song?
If you must.
No, I'm not. 4-0, baby.
Good for you. Congratulations. 4-0.
I want to send a shout-out to the Gibson Woods Wild Ones out in Indiana. I was at their program yesterday, which was really fun, and I did my talk, which is, oddly enough, titled Good Planets Are Hard to Find, and it was out in Schererville, Indiana. What nice people. It was a lot of fun being out there. And earlier in the week, I was at the Sauganash Garden Club, and what was funny about that is that there was an anthropologist there from the Field Museum was trying to figure out what my family tree was all about. No, I'm kidding. but she was there talking to people about the Climate Action Plan for Chicago and people's responses to it and what they're doing individually to, you know, to mitigate climate change and to reduce their carbon footprint. Look at these people over here.
They're having fun with the microphone. I'll give them this one in a minute.
You're going to get an extra microphone. We got three guests in studio, and they're trying to figure out how to use the microphone. They're working the microphone, even though it's not turned on yet.
Nope, not yet.
All right?
Not yet.
That's funny. So anyway, that was fun.
Last night you did this?
Well, yesterday I was in Indiana, and Thursday I was at Sauganash. And I got this email actually on Facebook yesterday. Washington Park Conservancy there is having a food preservation workshop next Saturday. Lots going on next Saturday, October 2nd, 10:30 and 12:30 at the Field House in Washington Park, 5531 South King Drive. University of Illinois Extension Master Food Preserver Ella Russell will lead the class. She and her assist, MFP, I don't know what that means, master food preserver, Rosemary Weish. They'll give demos and taste tests, refreshments included. Ella is also an award-winning master gardener and master composter. And the workshop is hosted by the Washington Park Conservancy. You can RSVP by calling 773-203-3418. I'll tell you what, if you want any information, just email me, mike@mikenovak.net, and I'll send you the contact information. So that's Washington Park next Saturday, 10:30 and 12:30, food preservation workshop. See, that's next. We grew the food in mm-hmm. the parking lot farm, which I'm going to have to show our guests after the show. And now we've got lots of green tomatoes out there.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to figure...
They're still fighting.
They are. I'm amazed. They're holding on.
And it's shriveling and brown in certain spots, but
yeah,
it's still germinating
the plants,
fruit.
The plants give up the ghost. The leaves stop doing their thing, but they're still connected.
The tomatoes haven't stopped.
No, they still continue to ripen out there, and the peppers are still ripening out there. I took some home last week. We put them in a salad. They were awesome. So I would say the parking lot farm this year at WCPT has been very successful.
Especially since it's the inaugural. Did I pronounce that correctly? I'm having
inaugural.
Coffee. Yes.
Since it was the first.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
because next year
it was trial and error too. Because we thought scale the powdery mildew amongst many things. So.
Oh, we just had the worst powdery mildew here. Yeah. It just wiped out our zucchinis and our cucumbers.
And the funny thing is that poor little plant is still trying. It looks half defeated, but yet it keeps reaching for freedom towards the back fence. And I'm just like, grow, baby, grow. You'll make it. And even though I'm like, cucumber.
No, that's
maybe
not
like
true.
A salad pickle.
We had a salad. We got a salad pickle out of it a couple of weeks ago. So you're right. It just refuses to give up the ghost.
It won't quit, though. It keeps expanding. It keeps reaching.
The people in the studio, I'm going to turn the mic on, so don't bump your heads when you all dive for it at the same time. Yes. they are the folks from Urban Habitat Chicago, Mike Repkin, who I told you about before, and Dave Hampton is here, and Molly Meyer. Together there, Meyer Repkin Hampton. What's that all about? Is that are you actually a business concern?
What we are right now, Mike, is we're a team of people working together. So it's not a formalized thing yet, but we keep on talking to each other every project that we deal with. So we're trying to. It really takes a group of people that have very specialized backgrounds to get things like rooftop food production and any type of roof farm.
Mm-hmm.
Together.
And now, Mike, you're a biologist.
Yep.
And Dave is an architect. Say hi, Dave.
Hi. Hello. I'm speaking as an architect. Hello.
That's his architectural voice.
Molly.
That says build things.
Yeah. Molly's a contractor.
What
kind of contracting work do you do?
I build green roofs. So that's both the urban roof farm, which we're going to chat about, I guess, soon, as well as
no, maybe not. I don't know if we're going to talk about it, actually.
Awesome. As well as traditional sedum roofs.
This is the Mike Novak show, after all. You don't understand that my whole show is a tangent. That's all there is. There's no actually main topic of conversation. Everything is a tangent.
The topic will talk about us, Mike.
It may. But I do know one thing that we will talk about.
Science.
Yes. Because we got more science in the show. It's because you guys, we are actually going to talk about green roofs and what you're doing, because you're changing the idea of a green roof. And for, you know, since green roofs were presented as a viable way of saving energy and cooling buildings and that sort of thing, pretty much the whole idea has been put some sedum up there, some plants that don't require a lot of care, don't require a lot of water, and then don't do anything with them. Just kind of leave them there and let them be sort of a passive installation. But right. You want to grow food on roofs.
Food, fuel, and fiber. Yep.
All of it.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So we're trying to think about, you know, a roof in general.
Pull that mic just a little closer to yourself.
A roof in general. Okay. Is pretty much an operational liability for a building. What if we could change the way we think about that and turn it into something that actually produces something? So not only do you have a change in the way the economics of roofing goes, but you're potentially growing an economy. And that's what we're really focused on, is trying to grow an economy in America on rooftops.
And how many places have you done this? Where are you starting? What are your plans?
We've had a bunch of different test plots. We have kind of a few flagships where we've demonstrated this material, like True Nature Foods over on Broadway, where we have food being grown on top of a food store. So the
food
miles.
An idea. Food on top of a food store. But, you know, the way the FDA works is the FDA will say, I'm sorry, you can't use that food in your store. They'll figure out. You can take it home with you, but you can't actually sell it.
They can say what they wish. However, you cannot interfere with agricultural processes like that. So it's okay.
Wait, I missed that. What do you mean by that?
There's not supposed to be any obstruction of agricultural activity unless there's danger to the public. So,
no, well, you've got the folks out there who think that organic gardening is a danger. You know, there are forces out there say, oh, you know, it's much safer to use the what we call the traditional method, which is pour chemicals on it. And some people say, you know, if you go organic, you got E. coli, you're going to die.
Right. Well, you know, everybody can think whatever they want to. This is America. However, the science
as long
is the
as
science.
It might be. Yeah.
Wait, and the data is the data.
Did you say
science?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
You know, what's interesting is we're also creating a soil ecosystem. We're creating a rooftop food-producing meadow on top of, like, True Nature Foods. So, therefore, we're not just having the traditional inputs and then output of food. We're actually growing fertilizer on the rooftop. We're actually growing cover crops. We're creating a diverse ecosystem. We've had birds even nest, you know, in our rooftops. We've had tremendous amount of different insects growing up there. So, you know, if people want to say what they want to say, that's fine. But there's absolutely no evidence that there's, you know, something better. I think that a lot of organic farming even needs to kind of step up to the plate and do a little bit more, just because you have a lot of organic farms that are, you know, just kind of importing a lot of stuff from other places instead of trying to use green manure crops or cover crops.
So you're saying even the organic farms should be more organic, should be greener.
Correct. Correct. And I think that that's what, you know, if you look at the history of it back 60s and 70s when there was definitely organic food production prior to that, but kind of the resurgence and the current thread of history that's going into the organic farms, there was a lot of talk about, hey, let's look at trying to connect to nature again. Let's try to get away from the disasters we've created. But there was also two kind of fields of thought on that. You know, there were people that were very pro-compost and people that were looking at trying to grow fertilizer right on the spot. Things like my friend Comfrey and other cover crops, you know, so we can actually grow the material there and have it there and have people have a lot of independence when we have inputs from other places for organic farming. That's kind of iffy, but nonetheless, I mean, you can't talk about the amount of destruction that's been done when you look at other forms of agriculture. You look at the soil quality. You know, you can't talk about, like you say, just some people that want to talk about, oh, let's put on some chemicals, it's much safer. No, it's destroying the future, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you know anything about the soil food web, you know what's happening to that soil. And a lot of people don't know about the soil food web, and it's the idea that you have all the microorganisms in your soil doing their jobs, and you can interrupt that at any time. And you can do it in many ways. You can destroy the web by with chemicals, with synthetic fertilizers, with, you know, too much water, with sometimes tilling, will destroy the web. It's a very complex issue, and the idea of the soil food web is put compost on, leave it alone, kind of. I mean, when you boil it down to its essence. By the way, we were just listening to biologist Mike Repkin from Urban Habitat Chicago. I want to get the contractor and the architect involved in this, because the idea of growing, what was it? Food, fiber, and what else?
Food, fuel, and fiber.
Food, fuel, and fiber. Pull that over, Dave, that microphone, and Molly Meyer. Rooftops are sensitive things. You got to be careful about the weight, I would imagine. What are the other issues that we're talking about? Drainage? Mr. Architect, what do you think of when you're putting these installations in?
Am I speaking as an architect again? Here we go. yeah, I mean, roofs are sensitive places. Every roof is different. When people come to us and say, we want to do a rooftop farm, can I do it on my roof? It's like saying, I want a house. Everything is different. So you have to assess the conditions. You have to make sure you have a roof that can support it. So what you need to do is have an Illinois licensed engineer check the structure and make sure that it can bear the weight of our system. But now, after having said that, one of the reasons our urban roof farm sets itself apart is because it's very light. We actually designed and developed this system based around True Nature Foods, which was a building that couldn't support a lot of weight. So we came up with a very lightweight system, so we feel like we can pretty much do it on any building. Drainage, sure. I mean, that's one of the things you've got to make sure and check. But there's not a whole lot that's complicated about this. Again, we're trying to do this on as many buildings as we possibly can. And many buildings in Chicago are ripe for this kind of thing, for retrofit. If you're planning a new building, for sure, bump up the structure just a little bit so you can have people go up there and gather. That would be perfect. You know, not every roof can handle the weight of people. People tend to see...
Well, that's part of it, because you're going to be farming up there. You got to harvest. If you're going to harvest, there's going to be people up there. Go ahead, Molly.
Well, we consider the people that go onto an urban roof farm as maintenance personnel, so no different than an HVAC technician who might be going up to repair an air conditioning unit. That said, we don't consider the harvest a point of gathering on the roof, but what we would like to see in our ideal roof condition would be a roof that could have a permittable deck space on the roof, so that we could have a little party or soiree up there and people could enjoy it, not just the maintenance personnel who are actually harvesting the vegetables.
That's one of the things that we, you know, food is about gathering. When we talk about, Mike and I started Urban Habitat Chicago 5 years ago, and one of the cruxes of that organization was we grew food and we cooked it. We gathered on Sunday nights. So food is an important social aspect. So, you know, for sure you can grow food on a roof. That's great. But if we had places where people can gather around it, not necessarily on the roof, to put it back into the center of really social life, that makes it much more important. You know, you think about food miles. Food is traveling from from California, 3,000 miles for a head of lettuce. Do you know your lettuce? It's grown 16 feet up. That's kind of bringing that social system back together, knitting it back together, if you have this hyper-local produce, as we like to say, because you can't get much more local than your roof.
No, you can't. That's Dave Hampton. He's here with Molly Meyer and Mike Repkin. They're with Urban Habitat Chicago. I need to take a short break, but when we get back, I want to talk to you about the practicality of this, because Mike and I have worked on projects or tried to get projects going. They haven't succeeded yet, but, you know, that's the way those things do. You do things on spec, but I've learned a lot from Mike just watching him and the way he and actually all three of you, because we went up to a roof recently that was another spec project, and I watched you guys examine the roof and how you were going to approach it, and you did it, dare I say, very scientifically. It was a joy to watch. I mean, you were taking your measurements, you had your tapes, and you're talking about measuring tapes and everything. And I think a lot of people are kind of touchy-feely about it. Let's throw up some grids, and then we'll throw, like I said, some sedum in there, and we'll walk away, and maybe it'll live and maybe it won't. But your whole idea of green roofs is going into the future. So we'll talk about that in just a second. Now, do you have questions about the illustrious? Oh, and by the way, if you are thinking about a green roof, give us a call, 773-838-9278. You got the experts in studio here. Well, there's three of them. If one of you doesn't know the answer, the other will, probably. 773-838-WCPT. If you have questions about the illustrious hot pink hydrangea, Invincible Spirit, which won Best in Show at the 2010 Independent Garden Center, then stop by Lurvy Landscape and Garden Center in Des Plaines this Friday for Pink Night from 5 to 7 p.m. Experts will answer questions about this perennial, and if you buy one, Lurvy's will donate $3 to the Breast Cancer Foundation. There will be refreshments, giveaways, and the good old gift bag. Extra trowel, anyone? And by the way, as we also said, apparently there are going to be pink hoses, which we really appreciate. This is the kickoff party for Pink Wink at Pink Week. That's hard to say, you know? At Lurvy's, located at 2550 East Dempster, so you can stop in anytime from October 1st to October 10th. And if you wear pink, you get 10% off any purchase. Fall is planting time, so take this opportunity. Pick up your bulbs and more. We'll be talking in the coming weeks about their Scarecrow Festival. But for now, the focus is on pink. However, Lurvy's has mums, pansies, planters, cabbage, kale. Don't forget your pumpkins and corn stalks. For more information, go to lurveys.com, L-U-R-V-E-Y-S.com. Be a gardener for life by shopping at Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center from October 1st to October 10th. And consider stopping in for Pink Night this Friday, October 1st from 5 to 7 p.m. Again, the address, 2550 East Dempster in Des Plaines. Lurvy's, a proud supporter of the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Have you planted your spring bulbs yet? Now, don't panic. There's still plenty of time. And if you can't stand the thought of losing them to squirrels, deer, or other critters, why don't you try using Bobex R as a bulb protector? It will give your bulbs a chance to survive when first planted and throughout the winter, protecting them from critters like voles, deer, squirrels, you know, those guys. All you do is immerse them in straight, concentrated Bobex R right out of the bottle. Excuse me. Allow bulbs to, you know, you pull that over, Heather. I think we've talked about this before.
It's live.
I know it's live, Tom Hartman does that all the time. It's like, does he have lunch just before he goes in to
do his
show?
I don't know.
Does he have like a can of Coke every time?
He's a master of that polite little burp and exhale. It doesn't actually make the actual burp noise. It's kind of like the...
I know, he's kind of like...
Yeah.
I swear he does that for the whole show. It's like, you know, Tom, here's a tip. Don't eat just before the show, okay? I don't know.
He's definitely not full of hot air, I'll say that.
No, he's not.
Tom Hartman's a bloody genius, in my opinion.
He's a smart, smart guy.
But, yeah, he does do that. He's a human being.
Actually, back to Bob-X. You put the bulbs in a Bob-X R out of the bottle, allow the bulbs to soak for 3 to 5 minutes, remove the bulbs from the concentrate, and allow them to air dry. Then slam them in the ground. That's what I do. Bob-X is harmless to humans, pets, birds, and aquatic life. It contains no petrochemicals, and it's made from natural and recycled ingredients. You know, maybe Hartman's like drinking Bob-X before the show. I have no idea.
I would not recommend that. I don't think that's on the label directions.
No. And it says, of course, always read and follow label directions. Tom, don't drink it. Bob-X is available only at your local independent garden center. You can always order it online. And if you call Bob-X, you're going to talk to a real-life human being. Amazing, huh? You can find Bob-X products at Siegel's Cottonwood Farm in Lockport, Illinois, Shades of Green Nursery in Chicago, Illinois, Fields Nursery in Crest Hill, Illinois. And remember, plants thrive and survive with Bob-X. Hold on. Let's see. Should we do roulette, or I should? All right, we'll do roulette. I have no idea what this song is, so we just go.
That's intense.
It is.
It's like you either want to be swept away on a ship or do a tango.
Oh, you know what? I have no idea what that is.
Authority. That's what that was.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You know what? I played that disc, and I think I meant to play the other one, but it doesn't matter. I'm sorry, what was that?
Wasn't that the theme song to Kale?
Kale? As in the kale you grow?
That's correct. I think it was the Kale theme song.
That's Mike Repkin weighing in.
Is kale an authoritative plant?
One of the most authoritative plants on the planet.
Authoritative. I can't speak today.
Why would you say that, Mike?
Rich in beta-carotene.
You know, I've got my kale and I haven't put it in yet. I've got my starter kale plants. It's time to get them in the ground. I better do it soon. But I love kale. There's some great, it's great stuff. Why don't you slide the mic back over to them, Heather? I wanted to ask you, Mike, because you and I went up on a rooftop recently and we were looking at it, and it was one of those sedum deals where they're grids and little plastic trays, and it couldn't have been more than 4 inches deep. And I was saying, okay, well, if we're going to plant vegetables, we've got to get some more soil here. And you said, no, that'll do it. And I said, why? What are you talking about? He says, no, we can grow stuff here in 4 inches of soil. What are you talking about growing? I mean, you can't grow everything in that you can eat, but pretty much.
Well, if you give me a big enough pot of coffee, yes, you can. That's what I'll tell you. Don't forget that, you know, when we look at something like bare rock successioning, if you go out to Starved Rock State Park, you see trees that are full-grown trees that are actually growing in millimeters of media, growing media.
That's true.
And
you wonder how they survive.
Well, exactly.
Part of the reason is the trees send their roots out sideways. They don't send them down.
Correct.
But still... That being said, they're still growing on rock.
Right. Well, they're actually growing on microbes.
Okay.
My friends and yours. And
in the soil food web.
That is correct. And that's the thing that is the difference between life and death in a soil. Is it alive? Is it full of the microbes? Does it have the soil food web? Or is it just dead, desolate material? So we can actually take... material that is dead, introduce soil ecosystems, and then we can support plants that normally would be unable to grow in very, very shallow media.
So let's do this specifically. You have the 4 inches of some sort of medium that people put on rooftops. It's usually got some sort of gravel in it. It's lightweight. Molly, you can address this too. Tell me what the medium is that you like to use, and then what are the additives you put in to get the plants to grow?
Well, what we're doing is we're using material that's relatively sterile. The majority of the media that I'm using is perlite, which is a volcanic material, has very long life. Then we look at some organics, a lot of rock flowers, a lot of rock dusts, but then a lot of different species of microbes, and in fact, even complete soil ecosystems we bring up to the roof, and we can then grow those soil ecosystems on the roof.
All right. And you can have a regular harvest. It's not, you know, are the growing times going to be the same? Is the harvest procedure the same? What was kind of fascinating when you were talking about this rooftop, when we saw these grids, there was sedum there, and I said, well, you have to remove the sedum before you can put the stuff in. You said, no, just throw it in there with there. So you can have that kind of a companion plant, too? Is this a symbiotic relationship?
Absolutely. You know, somebody who passed away not that long ago was Masanobu Fukuoka, who wrote The One Star Revolution, and one of his concepts was to mimic nature. If you look at a natural ecosystem, you have every square inch of land is covered with something. You don't go to a prairie and have rows of echinacea. You have echinacea in combination with big bluestem and all these other things. So to try to mimic that, and you can take advantage of different root types. You don't have to, whatever space you do have, you can fully utilize it. You don't need that much material. You know, if you think about something like hydroponics or aeroponics, you have zero soil. You have very, very thin layers of moisture supporting life of a plant. So you can put them to some pretty extremes. But a lot of times when we see a healthy soil ecosystem, you actually see protective effects of different plants working together and different microbes working together, the fungi, the algae, the bacteria. So you actually have potentially increased production per square foot when you have a bunch of different species working together. They have to be the right species. They can't be antagonistic.
Mm-hmm.
But you can definitely find plenty of organisms that should work together and do work together.
And again, how do you inject those organisms? What's your method of choice?
Well, that's a proprietary technology.
Oh, okay. But. Okay. No, I understand that. No, that makes sense. I mean, if you're going to move forward this and get people involved, of course, this is like, you know, the people who are, I've heard running for office in certain races here. Who is the guy? Oh, I can't remember. He says, I'm going to fix the economy. But it's a secret plan. After I'm elected, I'll tell you. Yeah, okay, thanks.
So let me tell you a little bit about my secret plan, though.
Okay.
It's my agenda. But, you know, we can actually move whole islands of life onto a roof. We can move whole soil food webs onto the roof, and they spread. If you look at any natural ecosystem, my favorite time was White Sands Missile Range in 1988, in New Mexico, and that's a pretty desolate place. But what you see is these islands of life. You see several different species working together to hold sand together to try to just colonize space. Well, in our ecosystem area, in our zone 5 with our rain and everything, these islands form up, but then they spread together. It's kind of, think of a checkerboard that starts out. And then you can bring things together.
But so I guess this is a question for Molly or Dave. I take it you're not into the grid system, but do you, you know, have a membrane or something, or have it? What do you call the opposite of the grid system on a roof?
Built-in-place green roof.
Okay, built-in-place green roof. So is that what you favor?
Yes.
So that allows the microbes to migrate?
It does. When you have the trays or modular systems, there's a containerization. So you have almost like a lot of miniature and separate green roofs on a roof. So you're separating the life. But by having continuous layers where you build each layer one by one, you can make sure that there's fewer edges. And those edges are what create bare spots because you don't have the interplay between microbes, water,
mm-hmm.
in the connection.
And so, and what, Dave, what's the difficulty of doing that system versus a grid? Or is it easier?
It's actually easier because you have fewer edges. As far as costs, you don't have the cost of the PVC. PVC is very expensive. It's also not an amazing material. We're doing something that's a monolithic system. We're doing it all at once. The other thing I've got to say is aesthetics. I mean, when you have the edges of each one of those trays that are drying out, they tend to, again, be these little islands of life, and in between it's bare spots. It's just more attractive when you have a larger system.
I would think aesthetically it's much more pleasing. And what Mike was saying makes sense to me, too, that if you have one big open space, again, the biology can migrate and spread more evenly. So that makes sense, too.
Yeah, it's, you know, we have to keep coming back to the fact that we're making a place on a roof. You know, a roof usually isn't, you don't hang out on your roof. It's not thought of as a place to be. Mike mentioned Masanobu Fukuoka. He's a hero of ours. Another one that we lost last year was Malcolm Wells. He was an architect. So, you know, architects were charged with making sure stuff doesn't fall on people's heads and hurt them. But we're also responsible for aesthetics. And that beauty factor, when somebody we're often up on a roof before somebody gets there, so we see them climbing up the ladder. For example, at True Nature Foods, when we're waiting for them to come up that ladder and you see them come up, their face just changes. It's almost like a, you know, the lizard brain kicks in, and it's just like, ah, I'm basking in the sun here. You see someone responding to that natural environment. It's actually a constructed ecosystem, but it is not trays sitting on a roof. It's not a green roof. It's going back to nature. It's really impressive to see that change.
It really looks like a meadow. And one of the things that we've been talking about, we're trying for probably 3 years now or more, trying to get the Red Line Green Roof Initiative started and going. You know, we had a friend
of ours.
As
in the Red Line L.
Correct.
In Chicago.
Correct. And, you know, we had
what's the idea? Is to get enough green roofs along the red line to beautify the red line and to make it more sustainable?
Right. You know, if you go up to some of these stations, the first thing you see is this nasty, crusty tar.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
If your day is starting on Monday and you really don't want to go into the office, and then the first thing that greets you is the crustorama, you know, that's not going to be a motivator. But imagine the same person not really wanting to go to work, going up and suddenly seeing this meadow of flowers and wheat stalks and all sorts of things and butterflies and, you know, amazing amounts of birds just all in this lovely meadow. That's something that's going to at least help you start your day. Mm-hmm. Still may not want to go
well,
to work.
And it's also it's good for the city. It reduces the heat island effect. If you're growing food up there, you're also doing good.
Right. And, you know, we're also looking at this as how do we grow jobs? How do we create employment?
Mm-hmm.
If we have local farmers. One of the things that we found through one of our friends who's a civil engineer, Holly Nelson, she did a study and found easily, just on a north branch of the Red Line, 65 acres of potential space to be utilized for farms that were pretty much proximal to the Red Line. So that equates out to, you know, hundreds, if not 1,000 jobs, you know, just in the direct farming. And there's a lot of people that, you know, are looking for employment. And, you know, this is just of course, we have to go ahead and do structural analysis on all that stuff.
I mean, and there are costs involved, too. People who own the buildings, obviously, you're going to have to spend some money to make this happen.
Absolutely. But don't forget, we're talking about a green roof that can potentially make money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're talking about return on investment potential. But in the big picture of Chicago, think about how many roofs we have. We don't have an exact number on that, but we're talking about a tremendous opportunity. We probably don't have enough Chicagoans to do all the farming. You know, so that's what great opportunities there. And like you say, urban heat island effect. Mali was in Germany for quite a long time, and Germany has, you know, talking about stormwater, man.
Go ahead.
Okay.
The mic's live.
So the reason for that green roofs took off in Germany in the 1970s was because there was a federal legislation there that said that every property owner had to pay for the water that was flowing off their land. And so,
see, this is the kind of law that's never going to get passed here, but I love the forward thinking.
It was very forward thinking. And as a result, that federal legislation turned into municipal policies, which said, all right, if you put a green roof on, we'll give you a reduction in your stormwater fees because we're the ones who have to handle it. And so there's huge return on investment in Germany because it'll pay itself off in a year.
Well, we could go on forever for this. I have to get things because I promised people we would. Let me take a short break. But we have to talk about, real quick, compost tea, Agent Orange, and Mars Rocks. All right, and that's a lot to get in because we still have Hennapalooza that we have to get to. So let's jump right into it. Here's a story from last year, but it says a lot. Heather remembers this. I was offering a prize to one of my listeners, and she didn't hesitate. She said, I want Eco Lawn. And she said it exactly like that. All right, maybe not exactly. But I know why. Eco Lawn is a blend of 7 fine fescues that doesn't need to be fertilized and once established will rarely need water. It's time to plant your lawn now. We're getting towards the end of that season, so hop to it. Eco Lawn is available in Chicago at Lake Street Landscape Supply or go to ecolawn.com, ecolawn.com.
Hey gardeners, want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees and the Morton Arboretum. I talked about this last week, but it bears repeating. Have you noticed that your oak trees have gone nuts this year? I mean, they've produced a lot of acorns. It's called a mast year, M-A-S-T, when acorn production is heavy to, they assume, ensure species survival. The good news is that it doesn't harm the trees or rob them of the energy they need to leaf out next spring. You're just going to have a lot of nuts in your yard. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborists at the Care of, or as we said last week, arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Do you want to become part of the solar revolution? Are you looking for ways to take advantage of this unlimited source of energy for your home or office? You need to be part of the 2010 Illinois Solar Tour on Saturday, October 2nd. This is a statewide version of the National Solar Tour presented by the American Solar Energy Association. It's the largest grassroots solar energy event in the world. It's self-guided and it's free. In Illinois alone, you can visit more than 185 homes and businesses with renewable energy installations. Owners and energy experts will be on hand to answer questions and offer advice. Learn how ordinary people are using solar energy, wind energy, energy efficiency, and other sustainable technologies to reduce their monthly utility bills. View a solar car wash, a solar heated high school swimming pool, as well as many homes powered by clean, renewable energy. Take the tour and become part of the solution. For more information about the 2010 Illinois Solar Tour on October 2nd, go to www.illinoissolar.org or check out Planet WCPT at chicagosprogressivetalk.com.
Here comes October, and maybe you should be thinking spring. What I mean is, that if you improve your soil now, you will be ahead of the game next year. One of the best things you can do is add a layer of Back to Nature cotton burr compost to your garden bed or lawn now. Cotton burr compost is a great food source for beneficial soil organisms. Remember, we were just talking about the soil food web. It's those organisms that are making your plants healthy. Back to Nature cotton burr compost feeds the organisms that feed your plants. Late summer and early fall is a great time to rejuvenate your soil and prepare it for the spring. And there's still time to work on your lawn. One of the best ways to improve your soil under your lawn is to use Nature's Blend with alfalfa and humate by Back to Nature. Give both products a try. Go to backtonaturecompost.com, backtonaturecompost.com, to find the locations and the specific products they carry. Or go to Burlington Garden Center in Burlington, Wisconsin, Red's Garden Center in Northbrook, and I had the pronunciation. I've been calling it Knuppers forever, but it's Knuppers or something. Knuppers, whatever. Knuppers Nursery and Landscape in Palatine. We're all dancing in the studio here. It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I've got the folks from Urban Habitat Chicago. We're going to get... Let's get our Hannapalooza friend on the line, and Michelle. We're going to wrap this up real quick. I don't know how we do this really fast, but Mike, grab that microphone because you're the guy. You and I had a real long conversation not too long ago about a bunch of different things. Compost tea. You're not a huge fan of compost tea.
Not really. I mean, it's not a standardized product. It's hard to say, you know, what is this? You know, depends on what's going in. You can have benefits from it, but you could also have disasters. You could have Pseudomonas growing all over it. You could wipe out your plants. You could create cool fungal blights or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a wild and crazy idea. Why don't you put compost on the ground, and then when the rains come,
right,
you'll make compost tea. You know,
well, that makes real sense. But but people want the newest and the latest and the greatest and whatever product is out there. And I'm not saying necessarily it's goofy, but
it could be okay.
I'm at a point, and I agree, kind of agree with you. It's sort of buyer beware.
Correct.
Moment for compost tea.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, let's all play Russian roulette with our compost tea.
All right, compost tea. Agent Orange, you told me, this is so funny. Okay, you know what you put on your lawn? When you use Weed and Feed, there's a product in there called 2,4-D in a lot of Weed and Feed products. There's another product called 2,4-5-T. Now, 2,4-D is a product that kills broadleafs. 2,4-5-T kills woody plants.
Correct.
And Mike told me that, well, you take a little 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T, put it in a pile in your garage. And
bada bing, you got Agent Orange.
You just created Agent Orange. And there's some truth to that. You need more of a process to make that, but
nope.
Really?
That's it. Yeah.
Just doing a big... So when I tell you that Weed and Feed is not good for you, listen to Mike Repkin, because it's one half of Agent Orange. All right. Now, I know there's other processes involved, and it's, you know, the combination does make a huge difference, but it's still a defoliant. It's still poison, right?
Well, it's not poison.
Okay.
Because for all the lawyers listening out there.
All right.
Well, we have to say it's hazardous material. So.
Okay.
But the biggest danger in any complex organic chemistry, in fact, in Vietnam, the problem was not 2,4-D or 2,4-5-T, not those molecules. The thing is, when you create those molecules, you create things that are sort of kind of like those things, but not quite. So one of the potential components that you create is a dioxin.
Dioxin,
TCDD. Yeah. And that's a potentially very, very persistent, very dangerous material. Some people would tell you that it's perfectly safe and you should put it on your Cheerios, but that's not the case. We see a lot of destruction from that molecule. And so it's almost the inert ingredients that are almost as hazardous. And there's been a lot of changes and a lot of regulation. They've tried to eliminate that hazard, but it's, once again, another Russian roulette kind of situation.
All right. Finally, Mars Rocks.
Yes.
We also, Mike says, you know, we're going to be sending these spacecraft to Mars with the idea of landing them, picking up stuff, bringing them back to Earth. And Mike says, don't you dare.
Right.
Why do you say that?
Well, Mike, currently we cannot even contain all the organisms that we know of on this planet utilizing our containment strategies. So if you were to bring in, let's say, something like smallpox or Ebola, you know, those are nothing. Those are not a problem to contain. They're very basic. They're actually very fragile viral agents. And there's bacteria. Most bacteria that you deal with are also very fragile. Even things that are spore formers are very fragile. But on this planet alone, we have things that we didn't even know existed, you know, 10, 20 years ago. And here are these things that don't even start growing until you get to pressurized boiling water or pressurized boiling oil. You know, the things that we consider sterilization temperatures just get the guys going. That's not even hot enough to grow some of these things. Mm-hmm. So we don't even know what the things on our planet do. So to bring things that may or may not be there is pretty ridiculous. We also have pretty much off the shelf, you know, using advanced 1990s technology. We can do every single thing we want to do to those rocks remotely by, you know, robot. You know, you could even have it, even if you had somebody on the, like, International Space Station controlling microscopes and other things, we can do it all remotely.
Well, all right. We're going to have that conversation in detail at some point. I want to thank Mike Repkin and Molly Meyer and Dave Hampton for coming down. Stick around till the end of the show. We'll chat, but we got to get to Hennapalooza. And before we do that, oh, by the way, they're with Urban Habitat Chicago, and everything is up on my website, all the links you can go to if you're thinking green roofs for yourself. And they've done a lot of things. They worked at Northside College Prep, the Vertical Gardens Initiative. We talked about the Red Line Green Roofs Initiative. It's all up there on their website. And they also did Parking Day, where they put green in a parking space. The pictures are on my website. You should take a look at that. It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center, and now through October 2nd, you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. Right now, you'll save 30% off the entire stock of fall and Halloween decor. Fall favorites like winter pansies and garden mums in all sizes and colors are here, and you'll save up to 50% off all remaining nursery stock. If that's not enough, now hear this. Sid's entire stock of perennials is buy one, get one free. Fall is the season for seeding and fertilizing your lawn. It's also the time to plant spring blooming fall bulbs. SIDS has the largest selection of tulips, daffodils, iris, and other popular favorites in the area. Visit SIDSonline.com for more information on planting fall bulbs and to download the coupon for $10 off your purchase. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. Remember, when you're done planting, and I love them for this, bring your plastic pots and cell packs to SIDS for recycling. Now, these days, more and more businesses are going green. We talk a little bit about that on this show, and that's good news. But the growing popularity of green service providers also points to the value of those who have led the way. WRD Environmental is one of them. Since it was formed in 1997, WRD's mission has been to create sustainable landscapes. They've always used locally grown native plants when possible in design and build projects, used recycled energy efficient supplies, and sought nature's balance. Being green has simply been a part of their DNA since their founding 12 years ago. Even the location speaks to their commitment. They're in the Chicago Center for Green Technology, one of the nation's greenest buildings. Their civic contributions towards sustainability run deep. Staff members are on the boards of a variety of green organizations, and through the years, they've donated their expertise to a number of green nonprofits. For experienced, sustainable landscape development, and they're just really good people, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental. On the web at WRDEnvironmental.com. That can only mean it's time to go to Chicken Central and bring in Michelle Toma. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you?
I'm good.
I love that song.
I do, too. I just had to get it for the show, because next week, well, today is Talk Like a Chicken Day,
bark, bark,
bark, bark. And next week is Hennapalooza.
That's right.
What is Hennapalooza, Michelle?
Hennapalooza is the Chicagoland Chicken Coop Tour. 15 Chicago area chicken coop owners and raisers and keepers of chickens are opening up their backyards and allowing people to come in, see their coop set up, and meet their chickens and learn more about raising chickens in the an urban and or suburban setting.
It's, you know, we've talked about chickens on the show, and I know that Angelic Organics Learning Center is one of the people behind this, one of the organizations behind this, and Martha Boyd has been on the show to talk about chickens. It seems like it's kind of taking off. People want to have chickens in their yard, and of course it's mainly for the eggs, right?
It depends on who you talk to. Mainly, yes, for the eggs, but
because
a lot of people are just loving them.
I was just going to say, you can't slaughter them, but you're saying some people have them as pets, too, right?
Yeah. And the eggs are sometimes an added benefit, and sometimes it is just for the eggs, you know, getting closer to their people's food sources and knowing where their eggs come from.
You know, that's funny, because the idea of pets with benefits is...
Right, exactly.
to coin a phrase there.
Yeah.
Now, what...
Appropriate benefits.
Yeah, exactly. You even have a blog about your involvement with. You rescued some chickens, right?
I rescued one chicken, and it's not right to only have one chicken.
And by the way, Tammy is the picture of Tammy is on my website this week's show. Tammy the chicken.
Yeah, Tammy is my rescue chicken. She's a bantam. I'm not quite sure what breed she is. Bantam means. It is can mean any number of breeds. It just means it's a smaller version of whatever breed it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I rescued Tammy just a few months ago, so I'm fairly new to all of this. And, yes, I have a blog, and I'm chronicling my experience with chickens and what I'm learning from them. And
do you feel like you're kind of being sucked into something that has no exit?
I do, yeah, but I'm not minding it in the least. I have to admit I'm a little afraid at how obsessed I've become with chickens.
It's like new version of the crazy cat lady, the exactly. Crazy chicken lady.
All right. Well,
I have not bought any diapers for any of my chickens, though, and there are chicken diapers out there.
No, so, no way! Yeah.
Wait. What, Mike?
Yeah, we had Martok the chicken. Named for General Martok. And, we used quite a bit of paper towel following Martok around. Oh, we saw chicken diapers as a...
Well, okay, can't you put that thing. In your garden, though? Can't you use chicken poop as a resource
Absolutely.
For fertilizer?
If it's composted. Yeah.
If it's composted, because it's really hot, as
oh,
they
so
say.
You can't just throw it in the dirt.
No.
You have to compost it properly.
And if there's potential pathogens, you want to...
Yeah, you got to be careful about that. Anytime you use... That's why they say don't use... Don't let your dog and cat... poop in your compost pile because of potential pathogens. So next week we have Hennapalooza, and again, I have the information on there. There's 15 sites throughout the area. How many in the city itself? Do you have any idea?
14 of them are in the city. One is in Oak Park. We're hoping that we'll have more in the suburbs next year.
Mm-hmm. And you have this thing called the Hennapalooza passport that you can get stamped at each location.
Right. So,
and is there a prize that you go to all the locations?
There's not one at this point, except for the satisfaction of knowing that you've seen.
I tell you what,
the most phenomenal chicken coops in the city of Chicago. Well, and Oak Park.
I tell you what, I am going to offer a prize to whoever gets all 15 locations stamped on their passport. You let me know, and we'll send them something. I don't know what, but it'll...
Okay.
I can't imagine it's going to be that many. But so,
probably not, but who knows?
So you tell them Mike Novak is going to... The Mike Novak Show is going to give a prize to the people who go to all the locations in Hennapalooza.
I will. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, Michelle, thank you so much. I hope it goes well.
Thank you.
And
we'll hope to see you out there.
And if you need therapy about your chicken obsession, let me know, and I'll see if I can help.
I will. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. That's it for today's show. We got it all in.
We did.
The moon rocks, or the Mars rocks, and the compost tea, and Agent Orange, and the Hennapalooza.
We didn't get to talk about rooftop chickens, though.
Rooftop chickens. All right, next on the Mike Novak Show.
rooftop chickens.
Well, I guess we'll have to do that some other time.
In about 20 years, rooftop chickens from space.
Okay. Oh, dear. And before we go, we say go green.
Or go home.
There's not anything else you're going to throw in? There's no time. See you next week.